Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. My name is Mike Klein. I'm a member of the Board of Directors of the Atlanta Press Club and also the Operating Board here at the Commerce Club. And I'd like to thank all of you for taking your time to come here for this event today. We understand that events here at the Commerce Club and Atlanta Press Club are events so successful because you take the time to put them on your calendar. And both organizations appreciate having you here today. So thank you very much. We appreciate having these people here today for this Newsmaker Luncheon. Russ Spencer and Monica Pearson, Karen Greer, who is standing in for Wes Sargentson, who was going to be here today with us, but is unable to be here today. And Karen has joined us today. And thank you very much, Karen. And Stephanie Fisher. We would like to thank Karen Kaplan and Fleischman Hillard. Karen, please stand up. And we would also like to thank John Dewberry. John, please stand up, John. Fleischman Hillard and Dewberry Capital are the sponsors for this event today, and we appreciate your interest in what we're doing. Thank you very, very much. A little bit of housekeeping here. The Atlanta Press Club is one of the largest and most active press clubs in the world. We have hundreds and hundreds of members. And if you know about press clubs across the country, you know that's the exception, not the rule. If you are not a member of the press club, we would love to have you join. In fact, we have a special promotion for those who join before July 31st. You will get a ticket to our Gorilla Ball. Those who know about the Gorilla Ball know it's a hoot. It's a lot of fun. And that's an event that's going to be held on September 15th this year at the Atlanta Zoo. Now, here's the format for today. Each of our four journalist anchors has some opening remarks. And then I'm going to work the room with a microphone. This is really your event. We want you to have an opportunity to talk to our anchors and reporters here from these stations. We want to find out what's on your mind and let you have a chance to talk with them. So we will begin with Russ Spencer, and then Monica Pearson, and Karen Greer, and Stephanie Fisher. So Russ, you're up first.
Doesn't seem quite right, Mike, to have a guy go first. But I'm glad I don't have to follow Monica.
Thanks.
Well, let me begin by saying I feel very honored to be in the company of these fine journalists who I admire very much, and grateful to have a job like this. They don't come open very often, especially in Atlanta, so luck has certainly played a large part in whatever success that I've enjoyed. And I stand every day and acknowledge to myself every day, at least, that I stand on the shoulders of my parents who sacrificed to give me a wonderful education. And for the last 12 years, I've also had an opportunity to stand on the shoulders of 130 journalists and other news professionals at Fox 5, and I'm very grateful for that. I'll confess to being a little bit jealous of Monica and Wes. Jealous of Wes because he's retired now and he doesn't really have to show up if he doesn't want to. And jealous of Monica because she was on TV during the golden age when people really watched TV. In my house when we were a kid, you didn't talk when Uncle Walter was talking. It would have been rude to speak. And now there's just so much news on. I get the feeling that it's sort of the background noise of our generation sometimes. And which is mildly ironic because my dad actually worked for a Muzak franchise. So it's sort of following in his footsteps in a way. I grew up outside Philadelphia. I'm not going to tell you my life story. I'm going to pass it down here. But I just want to share one thing with you. Because I think part of what we're supposed to do as journalists is lend perspective. From the time that I was 10 years old, I took a train from Paoli, the end of the main line in Philadelphia, to Haverford, about 15 miles away, with all the old guys commuting into the city of Philadelphia. I would get off and walk about a half mile to school, and then when school was over, I'd walk back to the train station, get on the train, and all the kids did this, and go 15 miles back past all these stations, and sometimes if we fell asleep, we'd wake up in the train barn. Thankfully, mine was the last stop. And I think to myself, would I allow my 10-year-old son, I have a 9-year-old right now, would I allow him to do that? And there's no way in the world. And I personally don't believe that human nature has changed in the last 35 years. I think what's changed is that there's so much news all the time about these sorts of things. If a child is missing in Utah, it becomes a daily obsession for us on the news in Atlanta, certainly for cable news. And I think it's something that we need to be a little bit aware of. I graduated from Princeton with a degree in English literature, scared to death that I didn't know what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I ended up in Scranton, from there teaching school in Guatemala, back to North Carolina during Desert Storm, where I got a real appreciation for the sacrifices that military families make, because Camp Lejeune's there, Marine Corps Air Station at Cherry Point, and Seymour Johnson Air Force Base. Went to Denver from there, where I got an appreciation for people who can smile at 6 o'clock in the morning, because that's when I was doing the news. And then came here in 1995, auditioned with Brenda Wood, and was lucky enough to get a job at a place where I still work for the same guy who hired me, which is, in this business, after 12 years, practically unheard of. But how long have you been the news director at Fox 5?
16 years.
Wow. I challenge you to find a news director, and you'd have to be successful if they get rid of you, a successful news director who's been around for 16 years in the country. I'm not sure that there is one. When I was asked to come to the Fox station, I thought to myself, well, now, don't they do the news when ER is on? But it seems really to have worked out pretty well. I mean, people want to watch the news kind of early. And the hard part, I think, now, and I'll stop. The hard part, I think, now is not that there's been a change in the way we have to tell stories, because telling a good story for TV is essentially the same as it always was. I think what's harder now is finding the good stories to tell as the day progresses that people haven't already heard, because they have so many news outlets. And if you don't find something new in this post 9/11 world, people are tuning in, I think, to see, you know, has something terrible happened since the last time I checked Yahoo or Drudge? And if it hasn't, if you don't have something really fascinating, then they're going to turn the channel. And if they turn the channel, then you're going to lose your job. And this is the only thing that I'm qualified to do. With that, I pass it to you.
Thank you, Russ. I'm Monica Pearson, formerly Kaufman. I was a newspaper reporter for 5 years at the Louisville Times in Louisville, Kentucky. I have been a television reporter since 1973, working at WHAS in Louisville, Kentucky, and then coming to Atlanta 32 years ago as of August 25th to be the anchor on Channel 2 Action News, when we still stood up and did the news. Little did I know when I was hired that I was going to, quote, be one of those people who helped change the color of Atlanta television. And I'm not talking about the fact that I'm African American, I'm talking about the fact that I'm a woman. Because at that time, when you turned on the TV stations, all you saw were three or four white men, and that's the way it had always been. But Channel 2 has had a history of being the first to try things. When Lester Maddox was governor of Georgia, Channel 2 put on the air the first black reporter, Lo Jelks. And then also Channel 2, one of the first women reporters anyone can remember around here was Gloria Lane, the former Gloria Crow. So someone before me had changed her name. What has changed to me most of all is how people now get their news, because it's no longer just the newspaper, which unfortunately is losing readership. I'm a newspaper lover. I love newspapers. But because of the wonderful thing called the internet, that is how I get to continue to do my newspaper reading, as well as just having my journal constitution. But what I'm finding is that our viewers now are more informed about news, and they understand news much better than we think they do. They understand rating periods. They understand promos. And they will call you up and use your jargon. And then I finally realized it's because most of them have cameras and are used to posting things on the web. So what I'm seeing is, whereas years ago the big ta-da was live, what I'm now finding, it also has to be live on the internet. I have a 26-year-old daughter. Unfortunately, she doesn't read newspapers. Unfortunately, she doesn't watch television. But she keeps her computer with her 24/7, and that's how she gets her news, her entertainment, all of her information. So that means for me, we have got to start doing things in a different way for this next generation, who really is looking at news in a much different way. So for me, the biggest change is adjusting to the age of the computer. Karen.
That's absolutely right. Karen Greer from WXIA-TV. I actually moved here 19 years ago to work for WGNX-TV, which is now WGCL. So it's been a while. Quickly, to kind of give my story of how I even got to Atlanta, was working in Charleston, South Carolina. Beth Bragg, where are you? There she is, all the way in the back, working in Charleston, South Carolina with WCSC-TV, and was looking for a change, was doing weekends and kind of split shifting and doing mornings, and had talked to my news director at the time about, you know, you got to give me something that's got a little bit more meat on it. And he was very honest with me and told me there was no way in Charleston he was going to be able to move me off of weekends or the shift I was doing, and that was, you know, kind of filling in on the mornings. But he would be happy, and he and the GM sat down with me. He would be happy to help me look for something else, but they didn't want me to leave. At the time, they were starting up WGNX to do news, a 10 o'clock newscast here in Atlanta. And so I'd sent my tape to a woman, Cindy Glozier, who was the EP at the time. And Cindy had worked at a couple stations in town with you, with XIA, with AJC. So I had sent the tape to Cindy, hadn't heard anything, called to check on it. And in Cindy Glozier style, if anyone knows Cindy, you know, she said to me, very curt, you know, if we were interested in you, we'd have called you back by now. And I thought, ooh, Atlanta. So I hung up and I kept working in Charleston, South Carolina. Well, a week later, she called me back. And she said, because you called, I decided to go find your tape. And we had gotten 1,500 tapes because we're starting up this show. And the news director and I, who at the time was Jack Frazier, who was at a WAGA, to show you how people move around in this business, have a question. In each one of your clips, your hair is different. We already have somebody in town who does that. So can you promise us you can keep one hairstyle? And I said, yeah, I can do that. So they flew me in for the interview. Enough said, did get the job, was doing weekends for WGNX. And 8 months in, the weeknight anchor left, and I was doing weeknights. And I say all that to say how the business changes oh so much. The faces may change, the call letters may change, but the stations are the same stations. But we rely so much on you all to help us get the product right. And right now, it's the internet age. As I was running down, I'm coming from Duluth, Highway 141, you know what that scene is like. So I'm coming from Duluth, and Dan Beeson is who I talked to about coming to fill in for Wes. He was emailing me, and I'm emailing him on a BlackBerry. This is our age. This is how we're doing stuff. You know, we didn't have cell phones when I moved here 19 years ago. That wasn't how we communicated. Now everybody's got a BlackBerry. You've got a PDA. You've got a way to do this. You're getting your news through different sources. Where the evening news was a big deal, morning newscasts are a big deal now. And streaming on the web is a big deal now. So we've got to find new ways to gather news. You know, in our newsrooms, they're asking reporters to get BlackBerries. You know, I think in some newsrooms, they're giving them out to reporters, but, you know, we're responsible for getting them and getting up with the new age and new technology and keeping up, because you know what? You get passed by really quickly if you don't know what you're doing. You can say, oh man, that's too hard, that's too tough, it's difficult. I don't think I'll ever get it. We said that when some of us were working with film and some of us were working with videotape. Well, now we're using editing that's in a computer. You know, it's all changing. So we really need you all to help us keep the product going and keep it fresh and keep it moving and keep going. And I'll pass it to Stephanie.
And it starts younger and younger, too. As I'm listening to the stories, I'm thinking I have a 7-year-old who is already, if anybody has young kids, when they're on the computer with that mouse, and she knows all about what's going on in the news, and it is incredible that it's just reaching younger and younger. I'm Stephanie Fisher. I'm with WGCL, the CBS station here. We have gone through quite a few changes over the years. Anyone who's been here any length of time knows that. From call letters to management to faces you see, we're finally getting our legs up under us, and I'm proud of what we're accomplishing. It is not easy in this market, especially, to grow a station, and one especially that has had an identity crisis for a few years. This is a great, great city and a wonderful market, and I'm just pleased to be here, and I'm grateful that I get to learn from these people every night. And I think it's unique in the fact that we all are friends, we compete, but I've been in other markets where you're kind of a little cold when you're at stories or whatever. It's like, you know, this is my thing. And while I think you need to stay competitive, I love the fact that I feel like we can count on each other if we have to, despite the fact we work for different stations. I've been in Atlanta 4 years. I came here from Portland, Oregon, and I worked at the Fox station there as the 10 o'clock anchor. Before that, I was in South Carolina for 6 years in Greenville, just up the road, covered the Olympics here in Atlanta, thought I'd never been as hot in my life. And I grew up in West Texas. So yeah, standing there covering the Olympics was like, I like this town. I really do. So I was thrilled to get the chance to come back. I started my career right out of college in a small town in Washington State, Yakima, Washington. And that's where my family is, in Spokane, Washington. I went to Washington State University, graduated in 91, and just feel real lucky to be in Atlanta now. And I remember when I was a little girl growing up in West Texas, my options for about the first 13 years of my life were I'm going to be a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. And when I realized that probably wasn't going to come to fruition, I noticed that I had a great love of storytelling. And I think that is one thing that all true journalists share, is we love to tell a good story. And you'll notice sometimes, and at least in my experience, it's been some of the people that I consider the best reporters or the best anchors can really tell a good story. You know, they're the one in the newsroom that's like, this is what happened this weekend. And it just comes down to that. Whether you are getting your news on the internet and the newspaper from us, is it compelling? Is it a good story? And I think that's really the backbone of what we do. And I thank you for having me today. It's my pleasure to be here.
Okay. There was a common theme through what you guys were talking about, and it was really technology. And I want to take us back just a little bit and then move us to today. The technology of the afternoon newscast in the 1970s, more than any other single factor, was responsible for the death of the major metropolitan afternoon newspaper. I experienced it at the Chicago Daily News end. You guys experienced it because you're part of the industry that made it happen. So we fast forward to today, and everything is mobile, it's on demand, it's blogs, it's podcasts. Y'all talked about that a little bit in different words. What's going to keep people in front of a scheduled newscast? Morning, noon, 5, 6, 10, 11, any one of those scheduled newscasts. What's going to keep people wanting to make sure they're sitting there for that newscast?
Off the top of my head, and literally, I'm going to think early mornings, and you're going to laugh at what I'm going to say. The first thing is, it's until they really are streaming news and you have your computer right there in the bathroom with you, and you don't have to worry about it falling into the sink or to the bathtub, I'm going to keep my television on so I can hear the weather, because that's a big deal in Atlanta. I want to know about the traffic. That's a big deal in Atlanta. Plus, I want to know what the headlines of the day are, and I like to have the video. But in my house, I usually have two things going. I have the radio and I have the television going in early morning so I can get my information from both. It's not as easy for me to have my computer there. Now, when and if that becomes a possibility, and I think it will in my lifetime, then I think we're going to have a real good job of having to make the product, what Stephanie said, compelling. But I also have to to add this. You can be a good storyteller, but make sure you get all the facts. Sometimes we go far too much for the emotion, go far too much for the storytelling, and we don't raise questions we need to ask. I am an old-fashioned reporter. I don't want to see the crying. I want to know about the other issues. And I'll give you an example. All of us did a story the other day about this woman furious because her child was MARTA police did not put her picture on television. My first question was, which I could not ask the reporter, was how can you be away from your child for 4 days and not check and see where the child was? Why did you not call your mother? Mm-hmm. We have gotten so much into having the emotion of stories, we for sometimes forget to have common sense and ask the common sense questions which tell the story. So that's a long answer to a short question.
Go ahead, up there. Russ, want to get in on that?
Well, I think it's a good question. I'm not sure we know the answer to it yet. We're sort of figuring it out as we go along. I mean, the Evening Bulletin tried to stay in business in Philadelphia. I think part of the answer is that they don't necessarily have to do that if they don't want to, because every story that ends up on Fox 5 News at 5 or Fox 5 News at 6 is immediately posted on myfoxatlanta.com. Got to throw that plug in. That's my part-time job these days. In all seriousness, really, it is. But I think people watch the news partly because, at least I think that's why they pay us all this money. I think that they like the people that they like to watch. I mean, people have been watching Channel 2 Action News for a long time, largely because they love Monica, they love John, they love Chuck, they love the whole, they like the team. And if you want to sit down and make that sort of part of your daily routine, part of the family, some people do consider people who are on TV part of the family, then you kind of have to sit down and be there when the family is all together. Now, will young people ever do that? I don't think so. I think that that's something that you've got to get to a point in your life where you have the time to do that. And you mentioned traffic. We do traffic reports at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm thinking to myself, well, why on earth are we doing the news? Everybody's out on, you know, the downtown connector at that hour. But for the people who are there, who've been watching Oprah or watching whatever else is on in the afternoon, who want that news experience, we're there in that medium, and we're going to be there on the internet, and hopefully we'll get you wherever you are. I think that's the best we can do at the moment.
Karen and Stephanie?
I think it's a trust factor, too. You get to a point where you trust certain faces, certain people. That's why stations get to the point where they keep people around that have been in the market, because there's that trust factor. The public has seen them. They've grown to love them. They've grown to trust what comes out of their mouths. You know, the reporters work with the anchors as a team, the photographers, photojournalists. It's all a team, the producers, the assignment editors. But in the end, it ends up coming out to make it look like we're the ones who've gathered all of this when we're not. We're just the ones who are relaying it to the public.
And for yourself, Karen.
I know, you're out there every day, pounding the pavement, you and Amanda, I know. And the yeah. So I think that's what it's going to take as well, is for people to get to a point where they trust us. And that was a good point. Are the young people going to want to sit down and watch a newscast? I'd have to wonder.
Some people have suggested that folks don't watch newscasts until they're old enough to pay real estate taxes and send kids to school. And that's when they get
not
interested.
True.
Stephanie?
I was just going to say that maybe I'm naive, but I really do think that people like people. And they want to see a person. And they want to hear from a person. And somebody that they like. And especially when it's local. I mean, I notice that for national stuff, we get it all the time. But when it's something happening right there where you live, I feel more comfortable getting it from somebody who lives there, too, that I know, and not just reading it on the internet. But
okay.
Yeah.
Let's
but
go
I
up
think,
here.
Excuse me, but I think that's the reason why we're all going to webcast.
Yeah.
Every afternoon, we tape them. So we are at least saying to this next generation that if you want it, you can get it. We do webcasts. And I think we're going to see those webcasts grow longer and longer in length if we're going to see what I call one day even ratings for that. And someone's going to figure out how to do it because it's a market that is growing and developing. Mm-hmm. And the station that steps to the forefront and develops that technology even more is really going to build not only for their on air, but also for their internet. And again, your personalities are involved. One of us anchors that webcast every day.
I'm Tom Houck. I have actually a question for Monica, but I wanted to say, and Stephanie, over at Channel 46, you've changed the concept of what morning news is in Atlanta now. It's a lifestyle program, basically from 5 to 7 with news, weather, and sports, but more of a lifestyle, not the blood and guts that we're used to on the other stations. And I think that's a direction where some of TV news may be going in the future. But my question is for Monica. Monica, at Channel 2, what did research say when they said, when you told them you were going to change your name to your husband's name?
I think the best person to answer that question is the person who looked at the research, and that's the general manager.
And?
Bill Hoffman.
And?
The conversation that Monica and I had was very personal, and things that she wanted that would be important in her life. And the conversation, it had to do mostly with not the research, but what the right thing to do was. And that's what we had to talk about.
I think what he's saying, Tom, and I think that's what's important, that where I work and the reason I've been there 32 years is because it's a family. And it was important to them as it was important to me. And so it was like, okay, we'll have to do more promotion. We'll have to do this. We'll work around it. Most people know you as Monica anyway. The issue of research never came up. What came up is, what will make you the happiest? And we're going to do, because we're family. You know you're going to cause us to have gray hairs, but we're going to do what we think is best for you. And that is why I've been there 32 years and will be there another 5.
Hi, Monica. My name is Jodi. Is this from Mary?
No, Marion. I'm 60 in October. 5 more years so I can get my Medicaid.
Monica, I really liked what you said about asking that extra question and where was that mother for 4 days. And it just reminded me of so often when I'm watching the TV news, it's wonderful how the news treats everybody with equal respect. But at the same time, so often those questions aren't asked. You know, why are you angry that the school, you know, put your child into discipline? Why aren't you angry that your child acted that way in the school? And it's seeming more and more that the media is putting it out there that anything's okay because they're showing so much respect for the person being interviewed. And I'm wondering, where is that going?
Well, Marion will tell you, our news director will tell you, when there are issues of that sort, and I feel the reporter did not raise the question, if we're doing frickin' frack, I have no problems with raising the question. And I will usually try to do it in a way through the producer so that I don't like to embarrass my reporters. So therefore, I try to do it in a way that we can get the answer, and if we don't have it at 5, we sure will have it by 6. Because I think it is incumbent upon us always to try to get all the information. The problem is we're trying to go so fast and get so much on so quickly, all of us, that sometimes common sense just doesn't come into play. And I think we don't remove ourselves quickly enough from a story to step back and say, hey, wait a minute, what's the other side of this issue? And I think that's the hardest thing of all. It's easy for me to sit on the desk and raise that question because I'm not standing out there in the heat of the day and have just run from here to there to try to catch these people. But again, the best reporters are those who think about it from both sides and raise the issue. Mm-hmm. But luckily, we do have the frickin' frack at the end so that we can raise the questions. It's just sometimes it's not my question to raise. But I think that management at our place, we regularly critique stories. We regularly let reporters know what's expected of them. I mean, Marion does a really good job of saying, folks, I want compelling stories, but we, you know, I need the facts too. Mm-hmm. So I think as long as you have that check and balance in a newsroom, it helps a great deal. And the more you bring it up, then the more you'll find that people will raise that question so that everybody's not always a victim.
I agree with everything you said. If I could just simply add that I think that in our newsroom, and I'm sure in the others too, there are layers of managers who ask those questions oftentimes before a story gets on the air, and that's the time to do that. If there's something like what you were speaking of that's so obviously, a question that so obviously needs to be asked, when they go through their script review process over the telephone, oftentimes that question will be asked by a manager, and it'll be addressed before it gets on the air. I think it happens more often that way than getting on the air in an unbalanced way. And certainly, Amanda and I have the freedom to do what you say, which is to ask the reporter a question, hopefully leaving them an out if they don't have the answer, but to try to represent the viewer. Because I'm sitting there watching that story just like you are at home. If something seems out of place to me or to Amanda, we're every bit within our right and our responsibility to ask the question.
And that's where technology comes into play, too. That's what I forgot to tell you. We do have computer terminals on our desk, keyboards, and oftentimes John or I will quickly email a reporter during the package, and they will take care of it that way. That's one of the joys of technology. When you're doing 2 hours of a show and news is coming in, you're constantly also editing stories, where in the old days, you couldn't edit a story. You basically were trying to fix it on air. So the technology, even for us, is good in that we're able to even look up information on a story. There was a fire. I can't remember where it was, but the company plant was called one thing, and I immediately got on the internet, found out about the plant, what products it made, and then we were able to ad-lib that in, and it looked like we were so bright. It was just the computer.
Yeah, Google has changed the world.
Google has changed the world.
I'm amazed at
Is
that somebody hadn't picked up on who your consumer is of news. It's all about what you're doing and what you perceive, not what the consumer is. And now that I'm not 24-hour employed, I'm a consumer. And the one thing that I see about the electronic media is that you need to look at timing of what you're doing and how long your program runs and how many interruptions you have for commercials. The other thing you need to look at is when are people at their computers where they are free to look at news and not doing business or something else they ought to be doing on their computer. If you're talking about a 7-year-old, that's different from somebody who's 35 years old, who should be your main consumer of news. And if they're at work and using their computer, they're not watching the news station to get your news on that. So the other thing is that a lot of people look at news like I do on TV and radio early in the morning before you go to work or get out of the house, or you do it late at night, and I get a repeat news at night. You ought to have a fresh news at night so that you add something to it, because that's when you're going to have a lot of your listeners, not at 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock, you're in your car going someplace if you're an employed a customer for your news. I think that we need to rethink how you present it for time and location and use the electronic media to improve that, not to make it different. I hope that wakes somebody up, because there, I would like to see a newscast at 11 o'clock when I tap into the TV programs and I listen to the early 7 o'clock news on radio, And during the day, I'm not on the computer all day, so that is pretty much my consumption, other than having a newspaper that's portable that you can take with you and read whenever you have time.
Well, there is tons of research done on who's watching, where they live, what time they watch, what they want. Every place I've ever worked, and I know everyone up here will back me up, they spend so much time and money trying to figure out how we can best give those who are watching what they want when they want it. As far as the time, I don't know. As far as long as networks program their prime time and their programs at the times they do, I think we're pretty, you know, stuck in where we're at this point as far as time of day, anyway.
Well, we're working on it, Miss Sally. I mean, at GCL, they do a 4 o'clock. Yes. We don't do a 5. We've got Dr. Phil. I mean, everybody's doing something different to see who can catch the viewers at the best time. So we are all working those mediums. And we're also doing webcasts on your cell phones now. So we're all doing something different, trying to catch people at the best time. So just stay tuned, okay? Stay tuned.
We'll take one more question up here, and then I'll come down that way.
Sally, you're very unusual in that you're watching more than one newscast in a day. I think from our research, we found that people now, unlike in the past, sample much more than they ever did. You don't have the same people sitting down watching a 5 o'clock and a 6 o'clock and then turning around and watching 11 o'clock. You get a different audience every time. So that 11 o'clock news is more of a, quote, compilation of the news of the day in Atlanta plus any breaking news. So you're very unusual. Most people don't watch the way you do.
I just want to ask y'all's feelings about the fairness doctrine, which is they're talking about putting into place in 2008, and how you think it will affect, as far as the TV audience, if radio broadcasting is taken off the air as far as that type of talk radio.
Oh, we're talking about talk radio. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think it'll affect TV at all, honestly, because I don't think that it's directed toward television necessarily. Yeah, it's directed toward the radio, right?
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't really know the answer to that. I'll be interested to see whether it does pass, though, because the market is being served. I mean, you made the point, Ms. Sally, about the consumer. The consumer decides what they want to listen to. It'll be fascinating to see what happens on that debate, but that's a lot of politics and sort of apart from what we're discussing at the moment. And as far as how it'll affect television, I don't have any idea. Do you?
I don't know. I don't know if that's our audience.
Yeah.
I guess my concern, I'll be honest with you, what I see and hear on talk radio is what I'm also seeing and hearing on both our blogs in newspaper and sometimes blogs and television is the meanness of people. That concerns me, that the anonymity allows people to be very hateful and hurtful. That concerns me.
Yeah, I think it's concerning, too, but I don't know how you let it. But that's...
Yeah, right.
Thanks for being here. You told a good story at the top of your remarks, Russ, about being a kid and taking the train across town and that sort of thing. I didn't quite get the point, though. Were you saying that that families of that generation were blissfully ignorant of the creepy things that could happen to their kids?
No.
Or that
I think we're way too afraid.
Or that people now are needlessly afraid. In part because of, I think it's already been established that if you sit and watch TV news all day, you have a really threatening view of the world.
Right. Needlessly so. That's the point that I was trying to make. And it's just a simple matter of opinion. I feel like because of the amount of news that's out there about individual instances that are exceptionally rare, people have a greater feeling of fear than they need to, me included. About what's going to potentially happen to your child. I don't think it's any more dangerous now than it ever was. But even though intellectually I have that opinion, it doesn't stop me from acting in a different way. And partly it may be because I'm surrounded by the news all the time. But I think all of us are. It's impossible to escape. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have known Elizabeth Smart's name in Atlanta probably 35 years ago. Now Elizabeth Smart's father, you know his face. Close your eyes, you can picture. He's been on TV countless times. The girl out in Petaluma, California, same thing. It's not that those things aren't significant, but I think when it's played over and over and over again, we can lose perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's partly TV's partly to blame for that, I think.
And I think the ticker as well. We have good debates about the ticker that runs in our newsroom, at least. It's just that it kind of gives a sense of all of this is very, very important. And if you ever stop and read some of it, sometimes, you know, it's, you know, Lindsay Lohan's in rehab, and then it's also about the soldiers. So it kind of, it's an amalgamation of everything. It kind of lumps all things newsy in one big, you know, group. And there's a danger in that. I think it sort of, you know, minimizes some things that maybe we should take more seriously and maybe raises some others to a level they don't deserve, in my opinion.
I'd like to echo a word that was said earlier from the standpoint of a consumer, and the word is trust. What have you mentioned it? You all mean it. I don't know what I'm going to do when Monica and John retire. I'm going to die.
Oh,
because
no.
I trust
no.
you.
No.
No, we won't let you down.
In spite of cable, which we can burn down if we like, you do, as a consumer, psychologically, inwardly learn to trust who you're watching. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult when the stations were trying to compete with two and kept changing their people. You just get to trust the person, they're gone. The key is it's going to take a long time. But you're an institution, and I'm proud of you, and keep it up, because you do set an example, and that's the important thing for us out here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
But you don't have to kill yourself, Dante. There are options, honestly.
Hi, I'm Vicki Elisa from DeKalb County, and I want to confess now I am a multi-channel viewer, so
uh-oh.
I watch all of it. I don't know if I need therapy for that. Talking about what you were saying when you were talking about the fact that many of the stories that are on there are about loss, death, murders, suicides. You are reporting this 24/7. How do you all keep your emotional health in place, since you live, eat, and breathe these stories every single day?
Oh, that's easy. I go to church and I pray regularly. I wake up in the morning and do my meditation. I also meditate before I go to bed. I play tennis and I name the balls. Literally, I do. And also, I do things away from the station so that I don't become entirely defined by the job. Like, the most important thing in my day during the school year is once a week, I go to Adamsville, and I go to Lenore P. Miles Elementary School with a bunch of first graders who don't know what I do or who I am. I'm just the reader. And that helps me keep a sense of where I am, who I am, and my responsibility to the community.
Mm-hmm. Just, you know, a few moments every day, picturing my little girl's face, remembering what is most important, and just echoing what Monica says. You have to have, I like to wake up, make sure, you know, the world hasn't ended. I'm sure they would have called me if it had, but, and then I can step away from it for a while. I don't have to spend every moment outside of work, you know, devouring all things news. So it just to keep that balance, you have to have your own life for your mental health. Absolutely.
And it is very important to be grounded personally. However you choose to do that, be it your family, be it your church, be it your community, however you choose to do that, I do. I have a great family, two small children. My husband, we do things together. It is very important. Sundays are our family day. Even though I work weekends, we start our day going to Mass, and going to brunch. Then they all make sure Mom goes to work. I mean, it's just that's our Sunday. Our Saturday lineup is usually taking them places. When I get home, it's sit down, talk about our day. Even though it's late for me, I make sure I start my day with them at 5 a.m. every morning, because that's what time they hit the school bus heading, you know, to their school. So you have to really keep yourselves grounded in something other than work. It is so crucial, because you can be torn down by all of these stories and by all of what goes on in the community around you. So I keep that a very important part of my life.
Yeah. For my part, I am an emotional basket case, so.
No, he's not. No, he's not.
No, I am. Yeah, no. And you know, if you're gonna have six children, see, and the great thing about having a colleague like Amanda is sometimes I'll just say, "Would you hold my hand, please?" That's actually true. I have. If you sat next to Amanda, you want to hold her hand too, guys. Don't give me a hard time. I have six children, which is beyond wonderful, beyond humbling. I mean, it gives you perspective and something to live for. And I carry this rosary around with me everywhere I go.
One of my first. Yeah.
So, you've got to find your ground where you can find it, and family is certainly probably the best place that, and I think most of us would agree, whatever faith you have with your faith community.
Six children would explain why you're a basket case. Maria, supporter with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. All of y'all talked about the trend of everybody going to the web and the internet, but we haven't really talked about what that is costing society. And I want to ask you about the state of serious journalism. At the AJC, we're very focused on AJC.com. The things that hit the trigger are, you know, Britney Spears, Paris Hilton gets out of jail. Right. I mean, these are
right.
The things that the audience is responding to.
Right.
How, and I'll just say this, a former business editor who is no longer in the profession said, "This is not why we went to journalism school." Right. Please tell me how we can keep serious journalism alive in this new age.
If I can just begin, and I'll be really quick about it. And I can't believe I've gotten this far without mentioning in some detail the I-Team. I think your point is very well taken. But I think people do respond. In fact, I know they respond to long-form TV if it's really well done. And the I-Team has been doing it well for a long time. The I-Team expanded under Bud's leadership when a lot of other ones were getting smaller. And, you know, just look at the web. A lot of people are now blogging about those particular stories because it makes an impact. And one advantage to having longer newscasts is the fact that it does give us time, I think all of us, to do the 3, 4, and 5 minute stories, because you can't tell a whole story in a minute and a half if it's a complicated or interesting story.
I don't think it's dead, though. I mean, one of the most popular shows for the last, how many, 20 years in the country has been 60 Minutes.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think that there's still an audience for it. I think there's a great audience, too, for the Paris Hilton stories, and we work for the audience. So whatever they want, we try to give them. And it's always the debate of, do we give them what we think they need, or do we give them what they want? So, and I think you just have to do, you have to concentrate on your investigative teams, and you have to, any opportunity you have to expand on stories and make them more long form, and you find that people respond to that, then you have to take those advantages. But I'm with Monica. I'm a newspaper person. I love to sit there and read, and I can choose what I want to look at and go back to. And it is just a different world than TV, unfortunately. And it's so frustrating some nights because you want more, 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 and they won't give it to you. You know, you got a minute 10, that's it. Let's move on. So short attention span theater.
I'm with you, Maria. I mean, I have not gotten rid of my subscription to the AJC, even though I can do it online, you know, still come 7 days a week because I want to sit there and open it up and, you know, my cup of tea, I want to go through it and I want to read what I want to read. And I know people say it's easy to go online and do those things. And, you know, I want to read the Wall Street Journal. I want to read it. I don't want to have to, you know, hope my computer's gonna, you know, work today, you know, those kinds of things, because I do have issues. I need my 10-year-old, 12-year-old to sometimes come in and get mommy online. But, you know, I think that one of the things I mentioned early on is it's up to you guys to tell us what you want. We're still working, you know, we work for companies. So we're trying to keep up with technology and what the demand is. And things are changing. We're trying to change with the marketplace. And the marketplace is demanding for us to do new, innovative things to keep up. So that's what we're doing. If they're telling us they want, you know, to see Paris Hilton walking out of that, you know, jail, we're going to have to give it to them. I hate to say it. we have to go. I mean, we fight. I know these guys do the same thing in our news meetings. I'm the main one. They'll tell you. If there's a story I'm feeling, not feeling, they all look at me and I'm still going, you guys, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you all the way to the end. But you know what? In the end, I'm not the one signing the checks or making the decisions. I'm just one opinion. It's up to you guys to email and to let us know what it is you want to see. You know, let the stations know what you're interested in. If the Paris Hilton stories aren't the ones that are exciting you.
But it's hard because you go and look at the ratings, which are now they can do minute by minute, and you
right.
see when Paris Hilton was on, it jumps
the
out.
Numbers are
so it's kind of the old adage of, I think when people are asked what they want and when there's research done, they're like, well, I want important
right.
things. But really, they want to watch Cops. So,
right. More than 500
or cheaters.
Americans.
So I think we want to be, you know, we want to do those types of things, but what gets people to the set is
right.
the titillating stories.
You know, several
but
years ago.
But I do think,
yeah.
excuse me, I do think serious reporting mm-hmm. in terms of all of our investigative teams, the whistleblower too for us, mm-hmm. as well as mm-hmm. what Mark Winnie does, that is what you build on, because that's basically
yeah.
what we've always done. We didn't call it an I-team in the old days 32 years ago. We didn't call it whistleblower too. The fascination for me in looking at the change in the marketplace, when I first came to the station 32 years ago, we were doing investigative reporting. We were doing consumer reporting. We had bureaus. Everything we're doing now, we had 32 years ago. I remember Irv Cuevas was our first Hispanic reporter and started covering the Spanish community, the Latin American community, which was very small then. But then the audiences said, we don't want bureaus. We don't want this. So for a stretch of time, none of the stations in this room who had bureaus, we got rid of them. Mm-hmm. We got rid of our bureaus. We got rid of our consumer reporters. We did general assignment. Maybe we'd have a city hall reporter or someone who was designated to do education, but Lord knows you didn't call it that. Then the research came back, and then all of a sudden we went to medical news and a medical reporter or a health reporter, and that's when all the doctors came back. Then we went back to consumer reporting. And then so this changed. Because viewers said, this is what we want. And you get more long format when people are concerned about their neighborhoods, their money, their taxes, their health, the education of their children,
yes.
and their government. So we still do it. And now it's titled, or sometimes it's just general assignment. But the point is, it is still being done. Mm-hmm. Now, it may be called something else along the way. In the next 5 years. But basically, we all are going to do those bread and butter, meat and potato, hit you in the pocketbook stories. Because if we don't, people will stop. Now, I love newspapers because I can cut them out, and I will steal story ideas. I'll find something in the bottom of a story that y'all missed that we can blow it up into something else. So that's the other reason I read. I don't have any problem stealing stories.
Yeah. So it's not stealing for you.
Okay, we have time for one more question. We've run long. Thank you very much. This has been terrific. Our final question will come from Senator Gloria Butler.
Who does everybody always say to you what they say to me? Hello, Shirley! Mayor Franklin!
Yes.
They do it to me all the time, so I know you get it because you look more like Shirley than I do.
Oh, there are some that think I'm Shirley.
Yes!
You know, years ago, we talked about the information highway. It's more like an information overload superhighway. Are you excited about all of the information that you can get, or is it sometimes just overbearing? Is it too much? Because I hear you saying you still love to read your newspaper, and I'm one of those people that get centered in on one channel and I stay there. Every now and then I'll look around for somebody else and I go back to the same person. And I agree with the gentleman here that said it's about trust. You learn how to trust those people that are talking to you, and you walk through, I do, walk through my house, talking back to the TV and interjecting. And I say, well, why didn't you ask that question? The same question that you asked about the young lady that wasn't with her daughter for 4 days. Where was she? But I just want to know, with all of the resources that you have to get all of the information that you thought
oh, yeah.
you ever wanted, Is it just too much?
Sometimes it is. I mean, but we need it. I mean, there are some websites that you look at and you think, gosh, I wish that wasn't available. One of them that I hate is that Zaba search thing, but I use it all the time when I'm looking for people for doing stories. But, you know, when you know you can find yourself on it and, you know, see your addresses and stuff, it drives you crazy. But there's information out there that, you know, we need just to do our jobs. And so, no, I think we need this. This is a long time coming for a lot of us. It's great. It's like a double-edged sword in so many ways, because there's always, you know, it's like too much of a good thing can not be good for you sometimes.
It comes with a greater responsibility, I think, because you need to sort of weed out. It's like, well, I saw it on TMZ.com, so should we include it? You know, you're like, was I better off not knowing that? But yeah, I mean, I think it does come with a greater responsibility. But I say more information, the better. You know, you can flesh out a story better.
Russ, you got to get in here.
Well, as you mentioned the last time, the idea of being able to be on the set and go to Google and find information instantaneously, stuff that you would have had to go to the library 10 years ago for, is really astounding. I mean, that has changed the world. Yeah. That, I think, is all to the good. Because you can, I mean, if you have any kind of discernment at all, you can tell what's legitimate and what's not most of the time. I think part of what you were getting at, though, was from a consumer standpoint, is it too much? As a consumer of news, I certainly feel like I have to be knowing what's going on all the time. Partly that's a function of what I do for a living. But, you know, they talk about people being the crackberry, addicted to their BlackBerry, because they want to know if they got an email 5 minutes ago. They want to know if they got one 30 seconds ago. I'm not sure we're all better off for being as connected as we are in terms of the quality of our lives. I mean, aren't there sometimes when you just want to disappear on the golf course or disappear at the beach and not have your cell phone? If you could make it go away, would you? I think it's a legitimate question. I'd love to not have a pager.
Well, all I have to say is I love being able to get instant updates from the AJC right on my little BlackBerry. Or when something is breaking news, I get it from my station immediately, because that helps me during the day, no matter where I am, to be a step ahead when I go into the station. And maybe something comes with the age of 59. I'm real comfortable not answering my phone. I am real comfortable when I'm on the golf course following the rules and turning it off. I think that's part of being comfortable with what you do and comfortable with who you are. Because if you don't learn how to turn it off, it will turn you into a perfect mess. So you got to pull away.
And the nice thing about having a 20-something-year-old child, too.
Oh, no kids at home. Hey, I'm putting them some fancy free.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Stephanie Fisher, Karen Greer, Monica Pearson, and Russ Spencer.
Thank you.
One. We will make a donation on your behalf to your favorite charity. Please talk with Laurie Strauss about that. Thank you very much. A word or two about our next Newsmaker Luncheons. Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle here on August 23rd. And Dennis Lockhart, the new CEO of the Atlanta Federal Reserve, will be here on September 6th. We appreciate your participation today. Don't forget to become a member of the Press Club or renew your membership by July 31st. For a complimentary ticket to the Gorilla Ball. Thank you.